Hello and welcome to this episode of The Herb Doctor. My name is Katrina Hegarty and I'm your host, and I'm with Dr. Dealish Clare. And a very good morning, Dealish. How are you doing today?
I'm good, Katrina. And how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. So you mentioned there earlier about the summer solstice. What a lovely time of year.
Yeah, it's a festival I always really enjoy.
So what are you going to talk about today?
I've recently started a Substack called Joined Up Medicine. And that name was partly inspired by comments from one of our listeners to the podcast, because I was asked to speak about cystitis, perimenopause and digestive problems. So we do welcome any comments and we will try to address issues as they arise. And I thought to myself on first reading, oh, there's three podcast topics. And on reflection, I thought, well, actually, the real issue for people is that they can get lots of information about various conditions like cystitis or menopause or digestive problems by looking up the search engines, and they come up with all kinds of information and suggestions. But the reality in herbal medicine practice is that people come with all of those three things. And this is the premise of seeing an individual practitioner. You can address all of these things. There's lots of self-help. I'm the first person to encourage people to do anything that might help their own health, so long as it's safe, of course. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give people the answers first and then come back to why these are the answers.
I like that.
So the answers are the actions. If a patient has all of these problems at the same time, what we want to do is facilitate the liver work, address the digestion, support heart function, support hormone balance, address the immune system, give the body ways of eliminating waste products, because there's clearly an inflammatory state underlying a lot of these conditions, and also use adaptogen herbs to cope with stress. And menopause in itself is a time of physiological stress. So the answer is chamomile, dandelion root, motherwort, chaste tree, marigold, echinacea, medicago, and Siberian ginseng. Okay. So when you look up the menopause websites for herbs, you'll find some of these. When you look up the cystitis ones, you'll find some of these. But what you won't find is things like liver support, and that I would say is core to all of these things, and nutritive herbs and cleansing herbs like the medicago. You probably will find adaptogen herbs. Now, the other core thing to do is increase fiber in the diet. So anybody who has complex health problems, one of the first things I do is address the fiber in the diet, because it helps with cleansing, it helps cholesterol, it helps all kinds of things. It helps the gut flora. And so we're going to go into now the why I've chosen those herbs. I would also use a probiotic to support the gut flora, and I would use essential fatty acids in the diet. And I can summarize those in cans of sardines. One of the funny things we were talking about the other day is it is expensive to go and see a medical herbalist, but I reckon people save a bundle of money by not spending a huge amount of cleaning agent stuff and processed foods over a year. I think seeing a herbalist means you actually save money. And the dietary things that are advised are not expensive foods. They're things like oats and sardines. So there's another rationale, which we were talking about the other day, that people don't consider. So cystitis, perimenopause and digestive problems. Here we go. I'm going to imagine this listener is somewhere between 45 and 55, because that's the average age of the menopause. Is experiencing some hot flushes, has irregular periods. They're likely to have had an episode of cystitis earlier, maybe in their 30s, and they probably have had three courses of antibiotics in the past year, okay? Because cystitis seems to be a particularly active problem at the moment. Likely to have a little bit of sleep disturbance and might be needing to get up and pass urine once at night, whereas they previously didn't, so they're not getting their healing sleep. May or may not have some joint pains. So that's a kind of a typical patient that will come and see me. I have about four patients like this every week. So what's important is to do blood tests. So if they haven't had their blood test done, they should do that, particularly for thyroid function tests and cholesterol. Make sure they're not anemic, all of the basic things, that sugar metabolism is okay. And if they see a herbalist, they would have a clinical examination for what's relevant. The three core triangles are digestion, immunity, and the pituitary, hypothalamic, stroke, ovarian, thyroid, the whole cascade of hormones. So that's the triangle that we're dealing with. And of course, in any one person, they're all integrated at every cell level. So let's take the menopause. The menopause is hard work. It's a period of transition. It's heavy lifting. Katrina is making a face. It's a funfair of disruption. You know, it's a disruption to the funfair of hormone balance.
I like the way you say funfair.
It's a funfair. If you were to look at the cascades of hormone balance, you get some that work like a roller coaster, some that go like the teacups, you know, for the little toddlers, some the helter-skelter where you've got to do a little bit of work, like take the fiber. Some would be like the Ferris wheel, which is just the mainstay of adrenal function. It's what keeps you in a narrow bandwidth for everyday functioning. The ghost train of hormones. Now, I had to think about that. What's the ghost train? The ghost train is the past experiences that, you know, suddenly, you know, and grief is one, and being in love is another one. You know, yeah, the ghost train of, you know, can I trust? Can I leave behind what comes with me? And these things, they elicit emotions which change our hormone balance. So emotions. Cheiroplanes, this is like the thyroid function, which is they spin round and round and round. They're very reactive. They determine the basal metabolic rate at which everything else functions. And then there's all of the wheels of death and the ones that send teenagers spinning round and round at enormous speeds at 180 degree angles. And they represent the adrenal crisis, right, of collapse and sepsis and all of that kind of thing in health terms. So the pituitary gland is the modulator of all of this, along with the hypothalamus. The hypothalamus and the pituitary are a bloodbath between the brain chemistry and the hormones, where they have a boxing match and they sort each other out. So that it dictates how we live on a day-to-day basis. Isn't that fun?
It's a lot of fun, thank you, yeah.
So interspersed in our lifespan as women, there are two big periods of hard work. One is puberty and the other is menopause. And they are equal and opposite, if you like. One is setting things in motion and the other is ending those cycles of fertility. So when people ask me how long the menopause lasts, I say to them, well, how long does puberty last? Puberty lasts, what would you say?
Yeah, well, I can only talk about my own, really.
Yeah.
I suppose mine started when I was about 12, 13, 14, kind of my early teens.
15? 3 years. Yeah. So 3 to 4 years. I think that would be average. Mine was the same, you know, and yeah, they're hell. Wouldn't be going back there again. And in the same way, menopause is a transition, and there are aspects of it that can be hell, but they're survivable, right? They're doable. Not if it's really severe, then you need help. Okay, but 1/3 of women have no problems at the menopause, 1/3 have mild to moderate problems, only 1/3 have severe problems.
Can I ask a question there?
Yeah.
Just before you go on. So you were saying about puberty and, you know, 3 to 5 years. Is it the same or is everybody different for menopause?
Everybody is the same but different.
Okay.
Right. The general trend is 3 to 4 years. So the point I'm making is that not everything that hot flushes is down to female hormones. That it's due to the whole interplay of all of this funfair of hormones, of which a main part of it for those 3 to 4 years is undoubtedly the female reproductive hormones. But if it extends beyond 4 or 5, you wouldn't say to a 21-year-old, oh, you're going through puberty. You wouldn't say to a 61-year-old, oh, you're still going through menopause. Yet many women continue to have hot flushes. And I would say it's down to addressing these, the digestion, the adrenal, the immune system, that it's much wider than just the female hormone system. I think that, and that led on to my question. That was my next point. So that was a great question. Thank you. And I recently did a delve into, because I get really curious, what what do hot flushes do? What's the purpose of them? There's nothing that the body does that doesn't have a purpose. Okay? So what on earth can it do? And it led me into what manages thermoregulation, which is the maintenance of regular body temperature without flushing from your navel all the way to the top of your head. And it comes down to cholesterol, thyroid, estrogen and progesterone. They're the main players in this field. And guess what? They're all managed by the pituitary gland. So the cholesterol affects cell membranes. It affects the fluidity of cell membranes, which affects all of the metabolism of the cell. The thyroid, because it maintains the basal metabolic rate, is a core identifier for thermoregulation. And estrogen lowers the body temperature and progesterone raises the body temperature. So during menopause, I apologize for coughing. I'm living in a building site at the moment, and even with the windows open, it's a bit gravelly. Estrogen, so the balance of estrogen and progesterone is why it's particularly flary during the menopause. But in the context of cholesterol, thyroid, and all of the metabolic things that are happening. And the purpose is it's a reset button. This is my interpretation of all of these interactions. It's a reset button. If these are becoming so discombobulated that the hot flush is like a reset button, and then you can continue. My interpretation, okay? But it works for me. It fits in with the scientific knowledge that we know. So that's some of the base, the background up to the menopause aspect. I'm now going to go on to the digestion and immunity, because that overlaps with the cystitis. So the digestive system is a core source of immune activity. 66% of the lymph system drains the digestive tract. The digestive tract is a tube that goes from the mouth to the bum. Everything that's inside the tube is outside the body. So the main reactor, the main interface between your outside world and your inside world of cell function is the gut wall. All right. Within that gut, we have a whole other hormone system, which is called the gut flora, which produce hormones, right? Small hormones that affect the pituitary, that influence the pituitary gland. So lymph is also part of the drainage system, which clears all of the things that, if they were to stay in place, would also be welcoming to infections. All right. So this patient, Anne, has had three courses of antibiotics in the last year. So that has a cumulative effect on the immune system. Antibiotics reduce the diversity of the bioflora. They also alter the metabolic activity. In particular, they reduce the production of short-chain fatty acids. They taking antibiotics also kills off the bugs that are susceptible to the antibiotics and leaves the resistant ones to multiply in their absence. So this is one of the reasons why using a probiotic is a good idea, both with antibiotics and after a course of antibiotics. So all in all, it leaves people susceptible to infections, and those infections are most likely to be resistant to antibiotics. I just note for parents that this is particularly relevant in early life, and evidence is emerging, right? It's still controversial, but there's emerging that multiple antibiotics early in life leaves a vulnerability to allergies, inflammatory bowel disease and metabolic disorder. So it may have been and may have had exposure to antibiotics in childhood. I don't know. I'm not going to conjecture on that one. But it emphasizes why the history of each person's personal, going right back to pregnancy, birth, early childhood, we go, when did this problem start? Why did it start? Why you? Why then? And then we go back to parallels, because it often echoes things that have happened earlier in their lives. And that could be another ghost in the machine, can't it? Except we're not machines, are we? Okay, so now we'll go on to the actual cystitis. Anne has previously had an episode of cystitis, so it's her weakest link. Have you ever noticed that most people have they have a tell for their health, which tells them when their health is vulnerable? They might have a little bit of eczema, a little bit of psoriasis might flare up. They might get headaches. They might get a chest infection. They might have insomnia, something which is a hint. And that's why our symptoms are our saviors, right? You pay attention to those, think about what's happening in your life, and address those things as the symptoms arrive in a mild form. And that's when you go and see a herbalist. Darlings, that's when you go and see a herbalist. You don't wait to get all three things in conjunction with each other. So definitely one is more vulnerable to cystitis during and around the time of the menopause because of reduced estrogen, because that affects the cell membranes of the lining cells of the urethra and the bladder. So that's an added vulnerability. Now, one of the ways to deal with the vulnerability due to dryness of all of the skin, including the lips of the mouth and the lips down below, known as the vulva, all right? All skin dries after, with age, whether you're men or women, right? The skin dries. And the skin that's most vulnerable is that where there's a change from one kind of skin to another, like the lips. There's a change from the skin on the face to the skin on the lips and then the mucous membranes inside the lips. And down below is exactly the same. So what we need is lip balm for the down below lips. In other words, we're talking about moisturiser. Now, my patients over the years have told me, and it's been a brilliant one to pass on, which is aloe vera gel, used as a lubricant as necessary for action in the bedroom, and also as a regular moisturiser. You just have some handy. And the other thing is all of the things that we use for lip balm, things like comfrey marigold balm. Dr. Claire's dry vagina cream is a base cream with lavender, ginseng, comfrey and vitamin E. Doesn't that sound nice? All right.
That sounds lovely, actually.
It is lovely. People come back for it time and time again. So this is about moisturising. And also, I'll just remind people of the basics of wiping from front to back rather than the other way around, because especially if you've handled it, you're bringing these resistant bacteria from the back passage to the front passage. Not a good idea. The other tip is around this time, and as a good habit in any case, is to sit on the loo when you finish passing pee. You just sit there and go dribble, 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 the last little dribble. It takes a little bit of patience, but particularly in later years, whether you're a man or a woman. See, a lot of these things that are put down to menopause in women, men also have them. So what you want to do is there's a tendency to hold on to a little pool of pee in the bladder, and that's a sitting duck for infection. So you want to just sit there and go, finished, no, dribble, dribble, dribble. And that helps. So moisturise and dribble. Okay. Now, if it's very severe, I would very much go for a collaborative approach where you would use an oestrogen cream or pessary. The problem is that there's no problem with it. Very little of the oestrogen is absorbed. But it doesn't address the hydration issue, the moisturising issue. So that's why I use them collaboratively. And often people just need the oestrogen pessary or cream 3 nights a week rather than every night. And they're darned expensive. The comfrey balm is a lot less expensive. And it's kinder. I like it because it's kind. The advantage of the balms is if you use a cream, you have to use preservatives. If you use a balm, you don't need to use conservatives because they don't host bacteria or fungi, whereas creams are a very nice medium. If you want to avoid using preservatives in the base cream, you need to use like a lollipop stick. We have a brightening cream and you put it on the lollipop stick and then put it on your finger because it's your finger that introduces the bugs to the cream. Mm-hmm. And keep it in the fridge. So they're just more practical stuff. We love to do practical stuff, don't we? So then we come on to digestion. You all know by now, we're only a few podcasts in, but even like the medical profession is caught up where digestion is the core of health. But guess what's the heart of health?
Heart? Your heart.
They're still playing catch up. So hormones also affect the gut. In addition to the antibiotics and the lymph system that we've talked about earlier in the digestion, hormones also affect the gut. We know this if we're women, because lots and lots of people with their menstrual cycle get bloating, distension, and changes in their stools, either constipation or diarrhea a few days or with the period. So that's no big news to us, is it? That digestion is core. And what we might not have thought about is that the liver does the work of the change. So The liver produces bile, which excretes the breakdown products of the hormones, and it also metabolizes all of the hormones from all of the hormones that we've talked about, including the gut flora. It also produces hormones. So the liver does all that work. The hormones also affect the motility. So you might want to use herbs that will calm an overactive motility, which is part of the distension and fermenting food and with distension and bloating and constipation and the diarrhea. So the motility is important. And the digestion is an important influence on the gut-brain axis via the vagus nerve. So everything emotional to do with the vagus nerve. So if we feel very emotional at the time of the menopause, if we get anxious, all of those things have a lot got to do with the gut-brain axis and the hormone balance. So around the time of the menopause is a time to be very kind to your pituitary, hypothalamus, and your liver. And it's an important time to eat fiber, right? Soluble fiber is porridge and oat bran, psyllium husks. And then for people who are really bothered by symptoms of the digestion, which is a lot of people around the time of the menopause, it's the mallow powder, right? Mm-hmm. I use that now instead of slippery elm because slippery elm is a lot scarcer and a lot more expensive. See, we like to keep it practical. Now we'll come back to our what herbs would I use for Anne, right? Bearing all of these things in mind, all right? And this is what you can't get in a list on the internet. And I'll also, this has also got to do with Anne is now listening to this whole story emerge. Anne is realizing all these overlaps. So there's a whole part of bearing witness and the therapeutic relationship, which is very reassuring. You know, Anne, this is normal. This will pass. This is how to encourage sleep. You walk. There's all kinds of lifestyle interventions over a few appointments. Right. There's no herbal medicine doesn't promise miracles, you know, without you participating. And even with your participating, that's a huge terrain to address. So it'll be over 3 to 6 months would be average for what I would see for people with menopausal problems. We're coming back to the chamomile, which is very good for the gut-brain axis. We're coming to the dandelion root, which is a bitter herb, which stimulates the production of bile and also the supports the enzymes that are the enzyme action of the liver cells. So that's why I love the dandelion root. Motherwort, the heart of a lion. You need the heart of a lion to cope with the all these changes. None of us like change. So the motherwort, particularly if your blood pressure is affected and particularly if you get palpitations. Vitex is the chaste tree. And it has a progesterone estrogen balancing effect. It's modulating. A lot of the effects of the herbs are modulating rather than, which is a balancing effect rather than stimulating or inhibiting. Again, it's very hard to get that over when you're looking for discrete pieces of information. Medicago is a very nourishing herb. It has an estrogenic balancing effect. It'll support estrogen function. And then Siberian ginseng, there's a whole group of herbs which are called adaptogens. Oh, I use the Medicago as a hormone supporting alterative, which also helps with elimination. And it's also very nutritious. The adaptogen is the Siberian ginseng. The Siberian ginseng, unlike the Panax ginseng or Korean ginseng, which does have a stimulating effect, the Siberian ginseng is more enhancing of performance for everyday tasks. So that's why that makes a particularly good adaptogen around the time of the menopause. Oh, the nice thing, maybe I forgot, is a couple of squares of dark chocolate because it is both stimulating and soothing. Like tobacco, herbs have they have normalizing effect. If you need stimulating, they'll stimulate. If you need soothing, they will soothe. Hence, you use chocolate for going to bed. And don't forget the sardines and the fibre and the probiotic.
Sardines, I'll give a miss, but...
Oh, sardines, you go on YouTube and you put them in your whizzer, your food processor with lemon juice and black pepper and various other things, salsa kind of things. And then you go, oh, A, they're not that bad. Or B, actually...
They're not really that bad. They're nice in a dress and...
Yeah, but so good for you.
Oh my goodness, yeah, they are.
Katrina is looking a little...
Where do you put all that information?
Like, there's so much information that you've given out there to help and anybody else who's suffering.
And hopefully that'll help out a lot of people with what you're suggesting and what you're saying today. And it's actually helping me too, because I'm suffering from hot flushes now at the minute. And also I can be itchy. As well. So aloe vera, fiber, all those different things that you spoke about are really, really important, because it's important to get these things, especially into your gut. And I'm really only learning about, since I started doing this podcast with you, I am learning about my gut and what it can take and what it can't take. So thank you for that, Dailish.
But I think more than anything, it's to look after ourselves as selves, not as, like, as a GP, if any of these things were particularly severe, like the cystitis is no longer responding to antibiotics, I'd be referring to a urologist, an endocrinologist, and a gastroenterologist. And that's what we've learned.
Yeah.
That we're a combination of these systems that do functions. But we're all the joined up writing. This is my concept of joined up medicine.
Absolutely.
And hormone replacement therapy if needed. But the need is to address some of these underlying issues so that they can then stop the HRT. No problem.
Yeah, I gotcha.
But to take HRT for physiological adjustment problems as though it's a norm, we are not deficient in estrogen after the menopause. We're not supposed to have estrogen after the menopause. And there are so many things that we can do to enhance our lives, which may include taking HRT, but it's not exclusive. That's my point.
Brilliant. I got it. Thank you so much to Anne, our listener, podcast listener, for sending that query into us. If you'd like to get in touch with us, we are on all social media, or you can leave a comment underneath the Spotify podcast that we put up, and we're also on Podbean. Isn't it Podbean we're on as well? And wherever you find your podcast, we are there. And please send us a message and review the podcast as well. We would love to hear from you. And Dailish would love to hear from you as well. In terms of anything that you would like us to talk about, we are here to help you as well. Thank you so much, Dailish.
Mm-hmm. Don't forget YouTube.
Oh yeah, YouTube as well. We're on YouTube as well. I'm sorry now, I forget any sort. But thank you for the reminder. We are on YouTube as well. And you can find us there under Dr. Dailish Clare. Yeah, thank you so much.